Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 12, The Killing of the Demon Agasura, Text Number 4. Although all these boys were already decorated by their mothers with ornaments of kacha, gunja, pearls, and gold, and when they went into the forest, they further decorated themselves with fruits, green leaves, bunches of flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. Text number 5. Mushnantam yonya sikyadin.
Mushnantam yonya sikyadin.
Gyatan arachcha chikshipu. Tatrat yascha punar duri rad. Da santas cha punara dadu. Mush nanta. Stealing. Anyonya. From one another. Sikya adin. Lunch bags and other belongings. Yatan. Having been understood by the proprietor of the bag. Aracha. To a distant place. Chikshipu. Threw away. Tatratya. Cha. Those who are in that place also. Punaradurat. Then again, through further away. Hasantak chapunak dadu. When they saw the proprietor, they threw it further away and enjoyed laughing. And once the owner sometimes cried, his bag was given back to him again. Translation. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. All the carrot boys used to steal one another's lunch bags. We should hear what they did, but we shouldn't imitate them. You sometimes take things from refrigerators too. Well, it's all coming from Krishna. When a boy came to understand that his bag had been taken away, the other boys would throw it further away to a more distant place, and those standing there would throw it still further. When the proprietor of the bag became disappointed, the other boys would laugh and the proprietor would cry. Then the bag would be returned. As I said, we should follow instructions, but we shouldn't imitate. Purport, this kind of, if you want to steal, then wait till you become a coward boy in the spiritual world. This kind of playing and stealing among boys still exists even in the material world, because this kind of sporting pleasure is present in the spiritual world, from which this idea of enjoyment emanates. Janma dyasya yataha. Vedanta Sutra 112. The same enjoyment is displayed by Krishna and his associates in the spiritual world. But there the enjoyment is eternal, whereas here on the material platform it is temporary. There the enjoyment is Brahman, whereas here the enjoyment is Jada. The Krishna consciousness movement is meant to train one how to transfer oneself from the jada to the Brahman, because human life is meant for this purpose. Atato Brahma Jignasya, Vedanta Sutra 111. Krishna comes down to teach us how we can enjoy with him on the spiritual platform, in the spiritual world. Not only does he come, but he personally displays his pastimes in Vrindavan and attracts people to spiritual enjoyment. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Urvamalama takshakam ashvatam pravo arviyam. Chidamsi yasya paranani yastvam veda savedavit. That there is a banyan tree and it has its roots upward and its branches are down and the Vedic hymns are its leaves. The one who knows this tree is said to be the knower of the Vedas. As we heard the analogy before, the tree on the bank of a river, it's the real tree. But then there's a reflection of the tree on the river. So those who are captivated by the reflection of the tree on the river, they want to enjoy the fruits of the tree, but the fruits aren't really the same as the fruits on the original tree. So in the same way, the whole material existence is a reflection of reality. And whatever is here is also in the spiritual world, but in reality. Sakyarasa is one of the reflections here. And that Sakyarasa is just one of the five rasas, of which also there's Madhurya Rasa. So here, as in the spiritual world, the sweetest rasa is Madhurya. Madhurya means like honey. So here, also there's Madhurya Rasa, but it's just a perverted reflection. It's not much different from the reflection on the water. It appears to be real, but actually there's no real substance to it. They talk about love, but actually what one is tasting is actually calm, crowd, lobe, and ultimately illusion. But if you tell people that, they'll get very disturbed. They won't listen to anything else you're saying. So generally speaking, we have to introduce Krishna consciousness very gradually, even to ourselves, so that the main emphasis is on the eternality of the soul, something positive, rather than something negative, how we're an illusion. We're in an illusion, and because we're an illusion, we don't like to be pointed out that we're an illusion, because we're attached to the illusion. It's like, if you have the same example as the worm in the stool. Now, we, from our point of view, the worm being in the stool is not in a very good place. We may want to help this worm by taking him out of the stool, but he won't appreciate it. He'll take it as an offense, as an imposition, as being aggressive. Similarly, if we don't introduce Krishna consciousness properly, people will think that we're fanatics, that we're trying to disrupt their existence. We're trying to take things away from them rather than trying to give something to them. So, at first we have to give them transcendental knowledge that they're transcendental. Then introduce the process by which they can realize who they are. They can get a higher taste, because without getting a higher taste, you can't really introduce the fact that people are existing in a lower taste. What's the good of telling someone, if they only have a dollar in their hand, that the dollar is not worth very much, and then try to take it out of his hand? Then he'll hold it even tighter, because it's the only thing he has. So if it wasn't worth very much, why are you trying to take it out of his hand? What are you going to do with it if it's not worth anything? Just let him have it. On the other hand, if you're offering him 2 kilos of gold, and he has to put the dollar down, or the euro down, in order to get the 2 kilos of gold, then you have a good case for offering him something and asking him to put the other thing down. He can't hold both at the same time. In any case, here we find that we have justification for all the things we did wrong when we were children. We can blame it on Krishna. We're all living in the reflection of the spiritual world. So therefore, naturally, we're going to do things that are reflections, like stealing. I remember when I was younger, I was quite honest. If someone gave me extra money at the store, I'd always return it. And then I heard one radio show where one lady was talking about how it's natural for children to steal. So I thought, well, that should be natural. Not that I what I do is that my mother would send me on errands, and I'd always, and I didn't steal from anyone else except from my mother. I'd keep the change. So it wasn't that she didn't know it, but she didn't take it very seriously. But I just thought it was normal. That's what you were supposed to do. I didn't want to be abnormal. So similarly, Krishna steals. Krishna, and not only he steals, but he has a gang of thieves in Vrindavan, and they're eternally stealing. It's not that they stole once. They're in the habit of stealing. Every universe they go to, they continuously steal. Not only that, but Krishna has a tendency to dance with other people's wives. So that tendency is here also, but it has to be checked because we're not Krishna. So there's some things that we can appreciate that Krishna does, but when Krishna steals, it's not ordinary stealing. If we steal, people become very disturbed, most people. But when Krishna steals, the residents of Vrindavan, they're looking forward to Krishna stealing. As a matter of fact, that's why they make their yogurt, and they hope Krishna will come and steal it. Because everyone in the spiritual world is simply absorbed in trying to please Krishna. Not only Mother Jasoda or Nanda Maharaj, but everyone, every living entity in the spiritual world simply exists for Krishna's pleasure. So whatever they do, they want Krishna to be pleased. So if they make yogurt, it's not for themselves, it's for Krishna. But unless Krishna comes and steals it, then how can they actually utilize the yogurt for Krishna? So although it appears that they're disturbed, but actually they look forward to Krishna stealing the yogurt. That's why they make it in the first place. And Krishna knows that. It's not that he needs yogurt and he has to go around stealing it, but he reciprocates with the desires of his devotees. Similarly, Krishna, he takes pleasure in dancing with the gopis, but not that he forces the gopis to come or whatever. He is so attractive that the gopis want to come, and therefore Krishna reciprocates with them and dances with them. But here, people are impelled by their own personal desires, not exactly their personal desires, because actually we're not independent at any stage. As I said many times, that we're all worshippers, so it's just the question of who we're going to worship or what we're going to worship. Now we've become worshippers of the material body that we're in. That's our worshipful deity. We spend time looking at it, making sure it looks nice, so other people can appreciate our deity and maybe worship it also. We take care of it, we clothe it, we feed it, we bathe it, we decorate it, and we love it. There's nothing more attractive to us than our own body. And we think it's us, but actually it's our deity that we're worshiping. And we have relationships with others also, because we're attracted by their deity. Sometimes we even share our deity clothes. We share our deity prasad with other deities. And we all talk about how nice our deity is, or how nice someone else's deity is, that we'd like our deity to become like that deity. So we're all worshiping a deity, and in the spiritual world they worship Krishna as the deity. Just like when we wake up in the morning, the first thing we notice is our deity. Well, we should be the first thing and the last thing we should be, and all the time, we should be remembering Krishna, and that this body is simply being used as an instrument for Krishna. That's called Krishna consciousness. Not that the first thing we wake up and we think, did my deity sleep nicely? Did it have any pastimes when it was sleeping? What am I going to feed my deity today? How should I dress it? Who's going to worship it? How does it feel? That's all right, but we should add Krishna to it. So then it becomes, we become a servant of Krishna, and being a servant of Krishna, we serve him and use his body, and we desire to use his body in his service. That's all. Otherwise, we're going to be impelled by our material desires, by our material senses, in order to do many different things, in order to achieve so-called happiness in the material world. But it's quite limited. We can only eat so much, we can only sleep so much, and even sex is limited, and defense doesn't know how much can people defend nowadays. They can hardly lift up the remote for the for their TV set. They couldn't even throw it at anyone. So people have even more anxiety because they're helpless. And they're afraid, maybe I won't be able to eat or sleep or mate today. As I said before, that story where Prabhupada was going to the doctor in California from Los Angeles, and on the way back from the doctor, he saw one movie sign. It said, "Is there sex after death?" So Prabhupada gave the lecture in the that day, and he mentioned the sign, the movie title, "Is there sex after death?" And the devotees at that time, practically all of them, were going out on book distribution, and they were talking, preaching to people. So Prabhupada told the devotees, "You should tell the people, don't worry, that after you die, there will be sex in 8,400,000 species of life." And Prabhupada said, "If they hear that, then they won't be afraid of death anymore. They know that they'll have sex after death." But it's punak punas charvana charvana. It's simply the same thing over and over again. Actually, in the lower species of life, there's less anxiety. It's simpler life. You never saw a tiger working from 9 to 5. Once a month or something, he looks around, sees that there's something he can catch and kill and eat, and the rest of the time he's off. He's on vacation. He doesn't have to build a house. He doesn't have to pay for his children's education. He doesn't have to support his wife. There's no divorce. There's no separation. There's no anxiety. Well, maybe sometimes if your lioness looks really nice, some other lion will come around, but that's life. Very simple, non-complicated. And human life is so complicated when it's always an anxiety, whether one's going to get something to eat, place to sleep, they're going to have nice relationships with others. But the animals aren't in such a difficult position as we are. And their situation doesn't change. Ours gets worse all the time. We make it more and more complicated. And the so-called advancement. Like 100 years ago, women would stay at home, they'd take care of the children, they cook, they clean. They didn't need so much education. There wasn't so much competition. They wouldn't have to be envious of their neighbors. They were actually friendly with, they actually knew who they were living next to. They were working together cooperatively. The children were useful. They would do chores. They weren't juvenile delinquents. They weren't smoking, you know, taking drugs and smoking things, and they were actually useful. They'd take care of the animals, they'd clean the house, it would be worthwhile to have a child. They would actually be assistants. But now, children are just like little demons running around destroying things, or crying that they need another toy that you can't afford. Half your house is just filled up with their junk that they don't want anymore, that they broke into a million pieces. Everyone is complaining all the time. Everyone is fearful. What's the next horrible thing that's going to happen? And that's called advancement. Previously, women would stay home. They didn't have to work. They take care of the children. The children would actually be taken care of. They felt that there was someone who actually appreciated them. Nowadays, women work, the man works, children put into a kindergarten, in some kind of school, where the teacher's half mad, trying to deal with all these brats running around, who don't listen to anyone. And the little kids are just hitting each other with the toys in the name of play. And they come home and the parents aren't there, and when they do come home, they're exhausted. They put the little kid in front of a TV set to watch all kinds of nonsense movies. They were half crazy, make them fully crazy. And that's called progress. Lovely material existence. So, the real life is simple life. Simple life, simple life. With love and affection. With concern and care. With nice food, nice water, nice air, nice relationships. That's real life. That's real material life. And then one can actually think about spiritual life. But now people are so much harassed by their so-called happiness in material life, or the lack of it, they have no time to think of spiritual life. They can't believe in it because they can't even find the happiness in the material life. What to speak of hearing about happiness in the spiritual life? Even the happiness in the material life is beyond their reach right now. Therefore, these books are essential to hear about what real life is and how to achieve it, even in the material world. How to live a real material life rather than a false material life, falsely presenting activities that will produce happiness, iPhones, computers, cars, all these different things. They don't produce, what happiness do they actually create? Maybe they're a necessity for some people. We don't decry them. But as far as producing happiness, how many people get ecstatic when they're in their car driving down the street? Especially in our cars.
They're prayerful.
What's that?
They're prayerful.
Yes. But even if you're in the most luxurious car, after a while you get used to it. If you step into a more ordinary car, you can't tolerate it. You can actually feel that there's a road underneath you. So the result is the people who become weaker and weaker and weaker, the more convenience they get. So even to pick up the remote for the TV seems like 1,000 miles away. They can't walk to the store anymore. They have to ride to the store. They can't cook. They have to go. They can't afford the restaurant. They get some instant meal that was full of chemicals and made in the last century. So many preservatives. Just like they have McDonald's hamburgers. There's a movie called Super Size Me. And they did an experiment with the hamburgers and the food in McDonald's, and put them under a glass, and they watched as they deteriorated, except for one food, the fried potatoes, chips, I guess they call them. They put them under glass, and 3 months later, they were perfectly the same as when they put them underneath the glass. Not a change. So if you eat them, put them in your stomach, after they bury you, and they excavate you 10 million years from now, they'll find out what the people were eating back then, because the chips will still be there, completely preserved. And this is called progress. Nothing can be, everything, the bacteria won't touch it. Just like, as I said, from one last comment, that they wanted to find out what is the value in cereal. So they fed some cereal to the rats. And then they'd see how the rats reacted. But when they fed the cereal to the rats, they fed it in the, they kept the box there. So the rats ate the box and left the cereal. Because they realized there was more nutrition in the box than there was in the cereal. So that's modern society. A lot of promise, but little result. And the real thing is in the spiritual world. Even the best material life is only a promise, but at least if the promise leads one to take up spiritual life, then it's valuable. And otherwise, it's just a waste of time. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Can I ask a question like, what did Krishna eat for lunch today? Prabhupada said, I don't want to go to the spiritual world to play with Krishna. I want to see what's in his lunch, what Mother Jasoda packed in his lunch bag today. All right. Kala Granthara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.